here with Matt Honeycutt, and it's Integrated Testing with Sprex 4.mvc. ASP.mvc testing on steroids, indeed. Just before we start, just a quick word to say thank you to our sponsors, Microsoft, Telerik, and Component One. Without them, events like this would not be possible. And if you would like to ask questions during this presentation, you have two options. Either join us in the Jabber room, jabber.net, and join us in ASPConf room 3. You can ask questions there during the presentation, or indeed you can ask questions using live meeting itself, and we'll get through them as quickly as we can. So without further ado, I'll pass over to the presenter now. You want to take it away.
All right.
Okay, Matt, you need to turn your audio again on again, I think.
All right, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, and you're present. You need to start sharing again.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. All right, so yeah, thanks for the introduction. My name is Matt Honeycutt, and I'm going to be talking about integration testing for ASP.NET MVC. So I'm going to be showing you my framework called Specs4MVC. Just fair warning, this is my first ever attempt at online streaming of any sort, so I apologize in advance for what are bound to be numerous technical difficulties. So, if you guys have any issues, if video cuts out or audio, just shout out over in Jabber and I'll try to get it sorted out. So anyway, quick introduction about myself. So I'm an ASP.NET MVC developer. I've been writing MVC applications since the first preview release of MVC, so I've been doing this for quite a while. And I'm also a huge proponent of test-driven development and just testing in general. So it was kind of inevitable that at some point I would want to get into acceptance testing, automated acceptance testing, and integration testing. And I saw a session by Jimmy Bogard many years ago at the MVC community group about how he was doing integration testing at his company, and it planted a seed in my mind, which eventually led to Specs4MVC. So a lot of what you're going to see, I got the inspiration from it, from the presentation he did many years ago. So some of this, if you saw his presentation 3 or 4 years ago, it may look familiar. All right, so let's go ahead and... 1 second, let me make sure I've actually muted everybody except for me.
Yeah, I'm...
Oh, I think I just muted everybody. So, can you guys still hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, good deal. All right, so let's go ahead and dive in. So what is Specs4MVC? Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, can we make, please, everyone, please make sure that their mics are turned off. We do have an issue, ongoing issue with live meeting, where for some reason we can't mute everyone, so I'm having to manually mute people. So if we can just, before we start off, make sure everyone's mics are off, that'd be good, fantastic. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so what is Specs4MVC? So it's a NuGet package. And the idea behind it was to make a NuGet package that would have everything that you needed to do end-to-end integration testing for ASP.NET MVC applications in one package. So you could literally just drop down, say, install package, Specs4MVC, and you would have everything that you need to start writing tests. So there's really three big components to it. There's an ASP.NET application host, and this is built on top of IIS Express. And what this does is it will take your application that you want to actually run tests against, and it will deploy it and host it for you on your local environment. So it's sort of like it'll create your local test environment for you to run your tests against. It also includes a stub SMTP server, so most web applications at some point are going to send email traffic out, and Specs4MVC's application host is actually able to intercept those messages generated by your MVC application so that then you can write tests against the content of those email messages. So you can test to make sure that it has the right title, it was sent to the right recipients, that it has the right set of attachments or content, all those sorts of things. All that's handled by that application host. Specs4MVC is a framework for doing browser automation, and it does that using Selenium WebDriver. But you don't have to use the low-level Selenium WebDriver API for the most part. There's a nice abstraction over the top of it that takes care of things like managing the Selenium driver, which is really just the remote control for the browser window. So it takes care of, you know, managing that in its lifetime. And it also tries to abstract away some of the just general wonkiness of Selenium. And I'll show you some of what I mean by wonkiness when we start looking at some of the code. And it also, the third piece is the strongly typed API for doing browser automation. So low-level Selenium or Wadin or any of those other frameworks, they're not going to be strongly typed. The low-level API is going to be very heavy on string-based navigation, string-based location for elements on the page and things like that. And with Specs4MVC, there's actually this nice, strongly typed API that allows you to write tests that look a whole lot like what your typical unit tests probably already look like. And because it's strongly typed, that means it's refactor friendly. You have IntelliSense, all those nice things. I do actually have two test frameworks. So I have Specs4 and then there's Specs4MVC, and the two are not the same. Specs4 was really all about trying to solve testing pain points for unit testing. And Specs4MVC is really about trying to simplify integration testing for MVC applications. So the two are not the same. You can actually use either one without the other. But the two, since I created them, obviously, they play very nicely together. So you don't have to use them together. You can use Specs4MVC with InUnit by itself. You can use it with MS Test. You can use it with pretty much any testing framework you want. But I do recommend that you use them together. I built them to be used together. And if you choose to do that, you'll find that's just pure awesome. It's much easier than trying to just use, even though Specs4MVC by itself is, you know, a huge simplification over a lot of common integration testing concerns. By putting the two together, you'll really streamline your ability to create integration tests. So let's talk real quick about what automated acceptance testing is and why that's important. So an acceptance test, it's really just a test that determines whether or not something meets specifications. That's all it is. And an acceptance test in software really means it's a test to see, has a feature been correctly implemented or has a defect been correctly fixed? So that's really what we're talking about when we say acceptance testing. And an automated acceptance test, as you can probably guess, it's just an automated version of that. It's an automated test to verify that your software adheres to some specification, that a new feature was implemented correctly, that a defect was fixed. So why is that important? Well, unit testing is great. I'm a huge fan of unit testing. But unit testing can give you a false sense of security. Even if you have 10,000 passing unit tests, that does not necessarily mean that your application actually works. If you think about a unit test, typically you're testing a unit of your application at a time. That may be at the method level, it may be a whole class, or it may be a small arrangement of classes together, but you're typically not going to test your application from top to bottom in a unit test. If you were, that's really not a unit test anymore. Now you're doing an integration test. And integration tests are painful, as we'll see. So unit tests are great. They get you a lot of the way towards having working software, but they don't get you 100% of the way there. They don't protect you against certain types of defects. They don't actually verify that your application works when a user comes to access it. So that's really the pain point, or that's the limitation that acceptance testing can help you address. So again, acceptance tests are still not going to get you 100% of the way there where you can be sure that your software actually works the way you intended it to. But if unit testing gets you 80% of the way there, a suite of automated acceptance tests might get you another 15% of the way there. So now we can be sure that, you know, that there's a 95% chance when we change our software, it's still going to work exactly as it did before. Or it's going to work exactly as we intended. Without automated acceptance testing, it's really not a good idea to do some of the stuff that are starting to become common practice. So things like continuous deployment. If you're doing continuous deployment, which is really, it's all about taking or minimizing the time between when a developer makes a change and when that change is live in production. If you're doing continuous deployment and you don't have a suite of automated acceptance tests or some kind of, you know, full end-to-end integration tests, you're a lot braver than I am because there's too many things that can go wrong wrong. You know, even something as simple as minor changes to your IOC container, your test may still pass, but when you put it all together, your application may blow up and it might not work the way you intended it to. And that's what an automated acceptance test, especially if you have acceptance tests that use browser automation or something like that to interact with your application the same way a user will, those types of tests can help protect you against those defects and help you be more confident that your application actually works. So if automated acceptance testing and integration testing are so important, why aren't we all doing it? Really, that's because the current state of the art with most of the frameworks you would use for automation of browser automation or for end-to-end integration testing, most of those frameworks lead you to the creation of tests that are difficult not just to create but also to maintain. So it really leads you towards bad tests, not good tests. So most of the existing tools also require you to learn a different methodology. So you have to actually learn a different style of writing tests than what we've done with unit testing. And while I think in 2012 now, I think most of us are very comfortable with unit testing, and I think that's kind of it's a skill that most everybody has picked up now. Integration testing is something that's still kind of on the fringe, and I think a lot of people don't understand how to write good integration tests. And with most of those frameworks that are out there, like Selenium and Wadin, you really can't use your unit testing skills fully. You have to write a different style of test, and you have to think about a lot more than you do when you're just unit testing. So there's a whole lot of different pain points that you have to address when you're going to do automated acceptance testing, and that's why most people are not actually doing automated acceptance testing. It typically is just too painful to do with the frameworks that are out there. Whoops. So tests, in my mind, they should enable you to change your application. They should not serve as a barrier to making change. They should not discourage you from making changes to your applications. I've worked on some projects that did have integration tests created using things like Selenium. And in those cases, we've actually avoided doing things like cleaning up HTML markup to make it more standards compliant, because we knew that something just as simple as changing the markup was probably going to break 30 to 50 tests, and we didn't want to have to go back and update all those tests. So we would actually avoid making changes to certain areas of the application because we didn't want to have to go update the tests. So those are bad tests. Those are tests that are not enabling change. They're actually discouraging it. So a good test should not introduce development friction. And when you're talking about tests that you have to go and update when you make a simple refactoring, that's development friction. That's increasing the time between when we identify a bug or we identify a new feature we want to implement. It's increasing the time between that point and when we actually deliver working software to the customer. So good tests should not increase development friction. A good test should also not break when you refactor your code. So if you think about your unit tests, most unit tests are strongly typed. You can do refactorings like renames, extract method, things like that, and your tests will keep working fine because when you refactor, you're not actually changing the behavior. That's the whole point. With integration tests, though, refactoring sometimes will break all your tests. If you change your markup, maybe you change the an ID element on a div, you may break all your CSS selectors in your tests. You may have a whole suite of tests that you've got to go back and update, and you've got to hope that you actually update them correctly and don't lose functionality that the tests had before. Good tests should not break for the wrong reasons. So in most cases, a simple markup change, maybe you refactored a form so that instead of having an input element called email address, now it just has one called email. Something like that really shouldn't break your tests. You're just refactoring. Your application still behaves the same way it did before. If a user were to come to it, they're still going to be able to use the application exactly as they were before, but your test is going to break because it's tied directly to an attribute label, or not an attribute label, excuse me, an attribute value. So that's the wrong reason for a test to break. A good test should decrease the time between when we think of a feature and we get that feature live in production. And it should do that by giving us confidence that we can change our software without breaking it. Another attribute of a good test, in my opinion, is it should work on any machine with minimal configuration. So you shouldn't have to install a lot of extra software, do a lot of extra setup in order to get the test to run on your machine. Ideally, you should be able to just check the project out from source control, right-click and say run tests, and be good to go. That's the ideal state. So with that said, let's hop over to Visual Studio, and let's look at some Visual Studio code and how we use Selenium to do integration testing. Whoops, we don't want to jump to the raccoon yet. All right, so The tests I'm going to show you are in a project called Fail Tracker. This is available on GitHub. It's a very simple sample application. It's a designed to be an agile project management application. But it's, like I said, it's just a sample. It's not a fully featured application by any stretch. But you can do some common things. You can create defects and stories. You can, it has a backlog, so you can go in and reprioritize items in your backlog. You can go in and make changes to stories, and it has a log of, who edited what and when. You can go in and you can create your own projects. You can invite members to projects. It's pretty bare bones, but it serves for the point of demonstrating integration testing. So this is the app that we'll be doing our tests for. All right, so let's look at how we could do integration testing just using raw Selenium WebDriver. Now, Selenium WebDriver is on NuGet, so there's a WebDriver package you can install, and I've got that installed in here. And that's what we're going to be using for this set of tests. We're not using specs for MVC. We're not using specs for. We're just going to write a test using Selenium. All right, so usually, unfortunately, what you will see in a lot of integration tests is you'll see, maybe it's not in the code, maybe it's somewhere else, but you'll see some documentation about how you have to configure your environment in order to even run the integration tests. So in this case, I've got a note here that I have to fire up the debugger for my Fail Tracker web project. So I've got to get the app actually running locally, and I have to grab its URL so that I can point my integration tests at wherever the app's running locally. And I've also got to change my webconfig's connection string to point to a Fail Tracker test database, and here's a note that says ask Steve for the script. Well, the problem is Steve no longer works here, so I can't create this Fail Tracker test database, and I have no idea what to do, so I'm just gonna, we'll just leave it pointed at my local development database. So let's see, I need to copy and paste that URL into the constant below, so let me go back over and let's grab this URL. And let's plug that in here. All right, and I need to make sure the test user's password is really this. I'm going to skip that step, and I also need to make a project named test, and I do all these other steps. And unfortunately, this is pretty common from what I've seen in a lot of integration tests. There's a whole lot of manual setup that you've got to go through. But let's say that I'm too lazy to do all this stuff, but let's say that I did, so now maybe I can actually come down here and run some tests. So let's start with a really simple test. This test that is occupying the entire window here, this is a test just to verify that if I try to go to the dashboard as an unauthenticated user, that I get bounced back to the login page. So the first thing I need to do a Selenium test is I've actually got to make a web driver. And you can think of the web driver as being kind of like a remote control for a browser window. So I'm going to make an Internet Explorer driver, so an Internet Explorer remote control, but I can't just make a new instance of it. I've got to actually create this capabilities object and populate it first. And that's because if I want this to actually work, I have to set this introduce instability by ignoring protected mode settings property to true. And this would probably be more aptly named as Internet Explorer driver.actuallywork. From my experience, if you don't set this value to true, it's hit or miss as to whether or not this will actually work on your computer. I've had some machines that it works fine on without setting this bit, and then other machines it will not work on at all. And I've never actually had any real issues with having this bit set to true. So most of the time, if I'm using Selenium, I'll just go ahead and set that bit to true just to be sure that it will work on more machines. So we've got this web driver. We had to go through and create this capabilities and all that before we could actually make the driver. But now that I have the driver, I can actually navigate to the log off page. And I'm doing that because I want to be sure that, just in case I went to the application in Internet Explorer previously, in case it cached a cookie or something, I want to go ahead and just be sure that I'm logged out. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the log off page and be sure that I'm logged out. Now I'm going to try to actually go in and access the dashboard. Then I'm going to verify, based on the URL from the driver, that I was bounced back to the login page. And when it's all finished, I need to be sure I actually close this driver. That's a disposable resource, so I do have to clean it up when I'm finished with it. And if you don't, you'll end up with a bunch of extra Internet Explorer windows hanging out there, and nobody wants that. Everybody wants as little Internet Explorer as they can get. So let's analyze this real quick. So we talked a little bit about the need to set up the capabilities and the headaches we have to go through just to create a driver, but that's not the only thing wrong with this test. One thing that stands out to me immediately is that I have this URL, this magic URL encoded in here. One of the nice things about the routing system in ASP.NET MVC is that I can change my routes and end up with drastically different URLs that actually point to the same place in my application. So I could create a new route for logoff as opposed to this standard one. I could also refactor, instead of having this logoff action, I could refactor that. Maybe it's named logout now. And this test is going to be blissfully unaware of that refactoring or that routing change. So my test is going to break if I make a routing change or if I refactor and rename this action method. Same story down here, you know, this dashboard, that's a custom route to the dashboard, but if I decide to change that route, well, I've got to remember to come back in here and update my test, otherwise this test is going to fail for the wrong reason. Same thing for the logon page. If I decide to change the routing, if I change the action name, my test is going to fail for the wrong reason. There's also the whole issue of I actually have to create, or I have to stand up an instance of the Visual Studio Web Dev server to host my application so that I can test it locally. So I have to actually remember to go and do that before I come in here and run my test. So let's actually run this just so I can, you know, show you what's going to happen. Assuming I've done everything right, this test should actually pass. So here's the Selenium web driver, and it's going to navigate over to the instance of fail tracker that's running on my web dev server. And you see it punted me back to the you could see it just for a second, but it did pump me back over to the login screen, and my test did indeed pass. So great, I have a passing test. But that's a real simple one. Let's look at something a little more complicated. So let's see what happens when we try to log in with no credentials. So what should happen is that it should display a validation error next to both of the login, the username or the email address field and the password field. So again, I've got to create my web driver. I've got to be sure that I'm logged off. Then I've got to navigate to the logon page. And now I've got to find the form element on the page and submit it. So I can do that using Selenium's find element, and I can say find it by tag name. So find the form on the page and submit that. Then I'm going to verify that I'm still at the login page, that it didn't actually log me in. And now I need to verify that it actually displayed a validation error for my email address and my password. And this horrible line of code here is all the code I need to actually find the validation message for my email address and then verify that there is actually a validation message in that span. So again, there's some problems with this test. We have the repeated code for standing up our driver and managing all that. We still have the magic strings for the URLs, and now we also have some magic strings for trying to find validation messages. So if let's say I change email address and just call it email, this is going to break because there's no longer going to be a field validation error for email address. Now there's going to be one for email. This is also not strongly typed. It's very easy for me to typo this. You know, I could maybe leave the E out, something like that. My test still compiles just fine, but my test is going to, again, break for the wrong reasons. I have no IntelliSense here. I've got nothing except just a magic string that I hope points to the actual validation message for my email address and my password. All right, so let's. I'm not going to run that one. We'll just run on here to the next one. So let's see what happens when we log in with invalid credentials. So as you can see, I have even more strings now. So most of it's still the same. I still have to spin up my driver and make sure I'm logged out, then go to the login page. But now I'm going to find the email address input element, and I'm going to type a bad username into it, and I'm going to type a bad password into the password field. And then I'm going to submit it, and again, I'm going to make sure that it didn't actually take me anywhere else, that I'm still on the login page. And then I'm going to check the validation summary to find to make sure that it actually does tell me that it, the username or password were not correct. One thing to note here is that there's really no abstraction around this stuff and here where I'm checking the validation summary. It's really at the wrong level of abstraction. What I'd really like to say is, you know, driver, find the input or find the email address. You know, I don't care how you do it, I just want you to find the email address and populate it with this value. Instead, I have to be very aware of Selenium's API. I have to know about the by class, and I have to know about these different selectors that I can use there. I have to know how to do a class-based selector to find the validation summary. So there's really no abstraction. You know, I have to use a very low-level API to do these types of things. So let's look at one more set of specs here. So let's see what happens when we actually log in with valid credentials. So mostly the same as before, except now I'm actually putting in what should be a valid username and password. And then I'm verifying that it takes me to the root of the application. But if I run this, what we'll actually see is that my test is going to fail. So there's filling out the form, trying to submit it, and it didn't work. You know, it tells me that it was expecting to go to the root of the application. It's still at the login page. And that's because, up here in the notes, I needed to create a test user in my local database and set his password to this in order for these tests to actually work. So I didn't do that manual step, so this test doesn't work. So again, just to call out some of the problems with this test, there's all this repetitive code for managing the web driver and spinning that up. I have to know that I need to set this bit to true, this instability bit to true, in order for the Internet Explorer driver to actually work correctly. I have to manually start up the application locally, and then I have to point this constant at my application running locally. I have these magic strings for the URLs that I have to remember to come in and change if my routing should change, or if I should rename a method on my controller, or if I should rename the controller itself. I have these magic strings for locating elements on the page, which again, if I should change my page, I've got to remember to come in here and change these magic strings. And then I have to remember to actually dispose of the driver. So there's a lot of magic strings in here. There's a lot of long-term, there's going to be a lot of extra maintenance that I have to do in order to keep this test valid. So this is the raw Selenium way. Let's look at the specs for MVC way. So let me just go ahead and close that out. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to enable this setup fixture. So I am using InUnit, and I don't know if all of you are familiar with it, but InUnit has this concept called a setup fixture. And a setup fixture is a fixture that contains setup and teardown methods that are executed before and after all of your tests run. So this setup method here, this start method, InUnit's going to run this method before it runs any of my other tests. And then once it's finished running all the other tests in this assembly, it's going to call this teardown method, this stop method. And we'll look at exactly what the config is here, but basically this is code to set up and configure specs for MVC so that it knows a little bit about the application I'm trying to test. But we'll come back to this and look at it a piece at a time. Let's actually look at a specs for MVC style test. So again, I am using specs4 and specs4 MVC together, but the two can play by themselves. You don't have to use them together. Here, this specs4 base class, that is just the raw specs4. It's really geared towards unit testing, but it happens to work great for testing specs4 MVC applications. This MVC web app, that's the actual MVC, the specs4 MVC piece. So you can think of this as representing the application that's under test. So typically in a unit test, you have a system under test. You have a class or module that you're testing. With specs4 MVC, you have a whole application that's under test. And that's what this MVC web app represents. And since I'm using specs4, it's actually created this SUT property for me. And this is my MVC web app. It's already instantiated. It's going to handle the lifetime of it, so I don't have to worry about disposing it or anything like that. So the first thing I have to do is I need to be sure I'm logged out. So these are authentication specs, and I want to see what happens when an unauthenticated user accesses or tries to log in. So I'm going to say navigate to the log off action. And then here's my spec for trying to access the dashboard. So when I navigate to the dashboard, when I navigate to the index page on the dashboard, then I want to verify that it punts me back to the login page. So my route should map to the authentication controller's logon method. So immediately, hopefully you notice that there are exactly zero magic strings in this specification. So all that we really have are these strongly typed lambda expressions. So as you can see, this is not, you know, this isn't a string, it's not a dynamic or anything like that. This is actually this is a strongly typed code that points to my authentication controller. And how does this work? Well, let's go back over here to our config. Or actually, let's run it first so you can actually see it in action. So let's go ahead and run this spec. All right, and here is our web driver again. And it's going to navigate to our application. All right, and our test passed. You probably noticed there was a little console window that popped up. That's the IIS Express application host that's built into Specs for MVC. So that was actually IIS Express being spun up to host a local test instance of Specs or my Fail Tracker web app. Oh, and let's see. So there was a question here. So between. Yeah, so there was a comment about what I was showing on the Selenium side. Yes, I absolutely agree that there are ways you can abstract the Selenium stuff away to make the raw Selenium code cleaner. And if you're going to use raw Selenium, you should definitely do that. But why do that? Why go to that trouble when you can, you know, do it the Specs for MVC way and have it all taken care of for you? So yeah, that probably sounds very arrogant, but you know, for me, I would much rather have strongly typed code and not have to write a bunch of those helper methods than to spend a lot of time trying to abstract away Selenium and bury that stuff under under an API. All right, so so how does this work? So let's go back over to our config. There's on the configuration side of Specs for MVC, there's two pieces that are at play here. First is the actual integration host. And this is the piece that contains the application host. So it contains an IIS Express instance. It takes care of intercepting emails if you want it to. That's really what this piece holds. And then there's the actual Specs for MVC config object, which is a it's a fluent object. It has its own domain-specific language for configuring Specs for MVC. So this is what allows you to tell Specs for MVC what you want it to do. So in this case, I'm telling Specs for MVC that I want it to host my application using IIS Express. I can actually point it to a static URL. You know, if I have a maybe a dev environment where I've got continuous deployment set up and I wanted to point it at that for some reason, or maybe I have it hosted locally in IIS, the full version of IIS, I could point it at the URL directly instead of using IIS Express. But in this case, I want it to run everywhere with minimal config, so I'm just going to say use IIS Express with a project named failtracker.web. And if you look over here, that's the name of my actual MVC project. And as long as you're using the kind of standard solution organization where you have, you know, your solution and then a folder for each of your projects, Specs for MVC will actually be able to find your web application and spin IIS Express up to host it. And I'm also going to tell it that I want it to apply a web config transform. So I'm going to say apply the web config transform named test. And most of you have probably messed with web config transforms before, but if we look at this config transform for test, I've actually pointed in my config transform, I'm pointing Fail Tracker at a local test database. And I'm also doing some stuff down here with the SMTP, and we'll dive more into that when we get to it. But I'm able to apply that web config transform to point it at a database just for testing. So this piece, this is what's making sure that, this is what's causing IIS Express to be spun up and to host my Fail Tracker web application. So that takes care of part of it. That's what enables me to actually have this MVC web app instance that points to a real instance of my application. The other piece is this navigate to method here. So you can see it's strongly typed. It's taking in a Lambda expression off of a controller, and it's able to translate that into a URL. And it's able to do that because Specs for MVC is aware of routing. So over here, I'm calling the build routes using, and I'm actually calling the exact same code that failtracker.web calls in order to configure routing. So if we dive into this, you can see it's really just standard routing code. And this is the exact same code. You can even see it's in the failtracker web project. This is just standard MVC routing code. So it's just building up a route collection. And I'm applying that same logic to this route collection that Specs for MVC is holding on to. And because I've done that, now Specs for MVC knows about routing, or how routing is configured in my application. So now it is able to take this Lambda expression and translate it into a URL. And it's also able to go the other direction. So after I've tried to go to the dashboard as an unauthenticated user and I've been punted back over to the logon page, I'm able to look at the route and I'm able to convert that back to, or excuse me, I'm able to go from the URL to a route, and then I'm able to verify that that route matches the route that should be generated from this Lambda expression. So I'm able to cut out all those magic strings for navigating to pages, and I'm instead able to use strongly typed, refactor-friendly Lambda expressions. So that's a really simple one. Let's look at one that's a little more complicated. So when logging in with no credentials, given the user is unauthenticated, so mostly the same as before, we're still going to the logon page, but this time I'm actually going to try to submit the form. So everything in failtracker.web, and really this is hopefully true of most ASP.NET MVC applications if they're following best practices, most applications are going to have strongly typed views that are backed by a view model. So in the case of this logon view, it's backed by a logon form, which is a view model. And we can hop over to that just to look at it. But you can see it's just the standard ASP.NET MVC style view model. It's got a little bit of decoration on it for validation and things like that. But I'm able to tell Specs for MVC to find the form for this view model or input model, and then I'm able to submit the form. And if you'll recall in the Selenium test, we had a nasty CSS selector in order to find the validation messages for different input elements. I don't have to do that with Specs for MVC. Instead, I can just say find the logon form, find the field that corresponds to the email address from that form, and then verify that that field is now marked as being invalid. And I can do the same thing on the password side too. And Specs for MVC is able to do that because I'm using the standard ASP.NET MVC conventions for strongly typed view models. I'm doing HTML.editor4 and things like that and to generate the markup. And since those methods work based on a set of conventions, I can in turn make assumptions about how those elements are going to be named and located on the page. And I can take advantage of those assumptions to write strongly typed assertions here. All right, so this is an example for logging in with no credentials. Just to save time, I'll skip ahead. We'll look at what happens when we log in with invalid credentials. So a little bit more code here. So we're finding the login form, and instead of just submitting it, we're actually going to fill it in this time. So I can say find the field for the email address, set its value to this string, and find the password, set its value to this string, and then try to submit it. And then I can verify that I'm not actually taken anywhere else, that the browser is still at this logon page. So I'll go ahead and run this just to prove it works and have something different to look at. So there's IIS Express spinning up, and here's Selenium WebDriver. I don't know why, but it likes to jump behind Visual Studio. There it is, logging on, and you can see just for a second there was a validation error, which is what we expected, so our test passed. All right, so let's see what happens when we log in with valid credentials. So pretty much the same test as before, except now I'm passing in this test user and this test password. And if you'll remember, in the Selenium version of this test, the similar test did not work because my local dev database didn't have a test user or a test password. There was instructions that I needed to create that locally, and I didn't do that because I'm lazy. But this test, I'm just going to go ahead and run it, even though it appears to be depending on this test user existing and having this particular password. I'm going to go ahead and run it. And you can see, I'll explain why you saw it log in twice a little bit later, but you saw it actually logged in, was able to get to the dashboard, and my test passed. So why is this test able to pass when the other one wasn't? Well, if you'll remember, I showed you that my web config transform is actually pointing Specs for MVC at a, or failtracker.web at a test database when Specs for MVC is hosting it. And I'm also, there's this line down here in my config, I'm saying use test seed data. So Specs for MVC config, this class is actually composable. So I can compose multiple instances of this config class together. And I'm taking advantage of that here to load seed data into my test database. So I'm registering a callback. I'm saying before each test, call this setup database method. and I'm taking I'm using this code from my main fail tracker project to initialize in Hibernate, so just doing session factories, setup, things like that. And then I'm also going ahead and recreating the schema. And remember, this is going to run before each of my specs. What this really means is that I'm throwing away the database and creating a brand new empty copy of the database before each of my specs runs. But I'm inserting just a little bit of seed data. So after I create this new schema, I'm actually adding a couple of test users in here. So each time one of my specs runs, it's going to get a brand new database that contains only these two test users. Now, typically in a real application, what you'll see is some other setup type data in here, just to configure standard seed data to simplify testing. So, you know, in Fail Tracker, if I was going to test everything, if I'd actually had specs for MVC when I originally created Fail Tracker, I probably would have some additional seed data code in here to load in maybe a test project to create some test issues in that project, things like that. But just for the tests that I have in here now, I really only need these two test users. So again, I didn't have to do any setup on my part. I just ran the test, and Specs4MVC took care of inserting the test users into the database, making sure that I had a database ready to go for me to write tests against. And let's go ahead and compare this version of the spec to the Selenium version. And at low resolution here, it's going to be kind of hard to really get the full feel of this, but here on the left, we have the Specs4MVC test for validating for logging in with valid credentials. And here on the right, we have the same test just using raw Selenium. You can see there's a lot more code over here on the right. There's many magic strings in here for, you know, finding things like the email address input element, the password element for the URLs, and all of that. And none of that stuff exists over here in the Specs4MVC version. And as was pointed out in one of the questions I got through live meeting, I'm not saying that this is necessarily the right way to use Selenium at the low level. This is just an example of some of the styles of tests I've seen. There's definitely things you could do to clean up the Selenium test, but at the end of the day, if you're just using low-level Selenium, you're still going to have a lot of this stuff in there somewhere, even if you've abstracted it away. Whereas with the Specs4MVC version, I've got strongly typed Lambda expressions that are taking the place of a lot of those magic strings. I have a built-in IIS Express host that will take care of hosting my application and applying web config transforms. So I'm really getting a lot more out of Specs4MVC than I'm getting just using raw Selenium. All right, so let's look at another example. So that was our authentication specs. Let's look at some project management specs. So let's look at a spec for creating a new project. So for creating a new project, I could, in my spec, I could have done just the navigate to the add project view. I could have just done that, just kind of like we did on the login side. We navigated directly to the login page. But really what I wanted to do instead was verify that from the main administration page, that there's some link, some way for me to actually get to the add project page. And that's what this find link to method in Specs4MVC is all about. So I give this a Lambda expression, and it's going to search the page for a link that maps to this particular action on this project administration controller. So this is going to find a link to the add project view, and then I'm calling this click button. This is an extension method. If we go over to, let's go over here and look at the admin area. So we're about to hit one of the wonky points of Selenium that I've encountered over the years. This add project button, or this add project link, it's actually a jQuery UI button. And you know, it works fine in a browser, works fine in Internet Explorer. However, when you're using it with Selenium, you can't just call click on a jQuery UI button. For whatever reason, it doesn't actually translate the click correctly, and the button doesn't get clicked, so the browser doesn't navigate. So to abstract that away, there's this click button helper method in Specs4MVC. So instead of calling click, I can just say click button, and that'll take care of clicking it, even if it's a jQuery UI button. I don't like the fact that this is an extension method in specs for MVC 2.0. I plan to have this this type of thing abstracted away so that you really just call click on some wrapper API, and it takes care of sending the right command to Selenium so that the click works regardless of whether or not it's a normal link, whether it's a button, a jQuery UI button, whatever it is. You know, it'll translate it into the right command to get it to work. But anyway, so we're going, so we're on our, we start in our spec, we're at the main page of our administration area. We're going to click the link that'll take us to the project, the add project page. Then we're going to find the add project form on the page. We're going to supply a name for our new project, and we're going to submit it. All right, then we're going to verify that it takes us back to our main index page, so the main page of the admin area. And then we're going to do something a little bit different. So if we go back over and look at our, this is our main project administration page. You can see I have a listing of all my projects. So I have a project name, the number of stories that project has, as well as the number of members that project has. And with specs for MVC, I'm actually able, since that page is generated from a strongly typed view model, I'm able to write an assert using a Lambda expression against the contents of that view model. So I'm able to say, for the first summary on the page, its name property should have a text value equal to my test project. And what this is going to translate to is wherever that, wherever the this value from the view model was rendered on the page, it's going to locate it, and it's going to access its text property and verify that it equals this expected value. And I can do the same thing for the number of members on the project, as well as the number of active stories. So this display for is going to take care of locating the display element for these different properties from my view model. Now, this is one place where specs for MVC does not work immediately out of the box with what's in ASP.NET MVC. On the filling out a form side, so on the editor side, that stuff works fine with just the default conventions that are in ASP.NET MVC. You don't have to install anything else. For the display side, unfortunately, the default templates that are in ASP.NET MVC do not provide anything that allows you to locate where a value came or where a value was rendered on a page. So even though the name, with just the default MVC templates, even though this project name is on the page, if I were to look at the markup, there would be nothing that told me it came from a particular property on my view model. And that's very different from the editor side, where I can look at an input element and I can map that back to a view model or an input model. So out of the box, I can't do that on the display side. But I've created a another NuGet package called MVC Display Templates. And if you install this NuGet package, what it will actually add to your project, and this does need to be added to your project that you're testing, not to your actual test project, it'll add a set of display templates that mimic exactly the default templates that are baked into the system.web.mvc assembly. So in system.web.mvc, these templates are all implemented as C# code. So there's some C# code for the default string template, the object template, the float template, email address, all these things. And they're just C# code. And I've converted those to Razor code. So they're 100% equivalent to what's in the system.web.mvc templates that ship with ASP.NET MVC with one very small addition. In addition to rendering the value, it also wraps the value in a span that makes it possible for us to determine what triggered that span. So now we can actually write specs like this. We can say, you know, find the first summary, find the span on the page that came from this members property, and now I can actually write asserts against that. So you do have to install the MVC display templates if you want to take advantage of specs for MVC's display for helpers. But in specs for MVC 2, that'll actually be a pluggable convention. So if you have some other way that you can locate display elements on your page, you'll be able to plug those in and use those instead of using the MVC display templates project. All right, so any questions so far? I'm mainly watching over at Jabber, so let's see. I don't think I have anything on the QA side in live meeting, so.
No questions so far.
Okay. All right, so let's move on. Let's look at another another test. So let's look at the specs for inviting a new member to a project. So For this set of specs, I'm actually taking advantage of some additional functionality from Specs4. So Specs4 has the ability to compose context for a test together. So I'm able to say, given some new project exists, and I can actually say I want to create a project. I can say create a project named Dummy Project. I don't have to actually write all the code here in this spec for going through and navigating the UI and creating the project. I've actually got all that logic encapsulated in this reusable context that I can use with any of my specs. So anyway, so this spec is going to go, it's going to start with a dummy project already being in there. And I've got some code here to grab the ID that's assigned to that dummy project. So since the ID is actually a GUID, I can't, you know, assume that it's going to be ID 1 or 2 or anything like that. I've actually got to grab it. But I'm able to do that using Specs4 MVC's findDisplay4 helper method to locate the ID on the page and grab its value. So anyway, so this spec, the given, is really just about creating a project for us to actually invite a member to. So here's the actual logic, assuming that we've already got our project created, our test project created. Here's the logic to invite a new member to it. So I'm going to navigate to the Invite Member page for my project that I created up here in my given. And I'm going to find the form to invite a new member. I'm going to populate the email address with this other user. I'm going to go ahead and submit it and go back to my index page. And then I'm going to verify that a new user is actually added to the project so that now there's actually two members for my project. And I'm going to verify that it actually sent an email message. So when I invite a user to a project, I want that user to get an email that says, you know, hey, you were invited to a project. Here's how you, here's the next step, the next thing you need to do. So every instance of MVC web app actually is allocated a mailbox. And this mailbox, assuming I've told Specs4 MVC I want it to intercept mail messages and that I've pointed through a web config transform the SMTP settings to point to Specs4 MVC, I'll have a mailbox that's actually going to catch any mail messages that are sent by my application. So I'm able to write strongly typed tests against the contents of those mail messages. So you can see this is actually a list of mail messages. And since they're strongly typed, I can write asserts against the recipients of that email. I can access the subject. I can access the body, attachments, any of that information. It's all stored in the mail message, and it's all accessible through this mailbox. So in this case, I'm verifying that when a new user is added to a project, they receive an email message that says, hey, do whatever you need to do now. So let's go ahead and run this one. Let's get this out of the way so we can actually watch it. All right, so my test passed. It was able to add or to invite a new member. It was able to create the dummy project and then invite a member to it. One thing to note is that there's nothing in here about logging in. So in most cases, I would imagine that most people are going to want to write specs as if they're a user interacting with their application that's already logged in. So Specs4 MVC actually makes it very easy to kind of change the default state of your specs to be an authenticated user. So I do that by saying authenticate before each test using some class that implements this iHandleAuthentication interface. And really, all this is going to do is it's a callback that's going to be invoked with the MVC web app before the test run. So this gives me the opportunity to go ahead and log in to my application before my specs are executed. That way I don't have this repetitive code for going in and doing the actual login in each of my specs. I can put it in one place and make that kind of the default behavior for all my specs going forward. So that's why here in my invite member to a project spec, I don't have anything about logging in. It's just the default for my MVC web app because I configured it that way. All right. So any questions so far?
Yes, we actually have two questions here. Both related. I think they're both related. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the Piotr, is it? I'm sorry if I've mispronounced. Does that find link to find links that do Ajax call? He's not familiar with MVC, so he doesn't know the difference between ordinal postbacks and Ajax calls. When it comes to creating user pages and the HTML outputted to the browser, and there's another question as well related to that: how easy or difficult is it to write specs for MVC tests for SPA's single page applications?
So I'll answer the single page application one first. I have not tackled the single page application testing yet. I have created a jQuery UI mobile application using specs for MVC to drive the entire thing, and it worked very well with that. There were a few things that I did have to write my own extension methods that were project specific to try and encapsulate some of the client side stuff, some of the stuff that's not strongly typed, that there weren't strongly typed conventions that I could leverage. But actually, that gave me some ideas for things I want to expose in Specs for MVC 2.0, where you can plug in your own conventions that should help alleviate some of that pain. But the short answer is that, you know, you should be able to use Specs for MVC with a single page application. You just probably are not going to be able to take full advantage of everything that it can do, because a lot of that stuff is going to there's not going to be a strongly typed set of code that you can use to base your tests around. So some of this stuff is not going to apply to a single page application. So the other question was about the find link to method and how that behaves. All this is really doing is it's scanning the DOM for it. So we give it an expression, we give it a Lambda expression, and it's able to convert that to a URL. It's just going to go through and scan the DOM and look for an anchor element that has that href that matches that URL. So it really should, as long as you have an anchor element on the page that maps to this particular route, it should be able to locate it. It doesn't matter if that link's going to, you know, has something attached to it that's going to cause it to be invoked over Ajax. It should still be able to locate it and fire it.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yep. All right. So we still have a little bit of time left. So let's jump back over to the slides real quick. It's time for story time. So this horrifying creature was for a short time the official mascot of Story Grooming at the company I work for now. So hopefully everybody will have nightmares about him tonight. So if you're on an agile team or a scrum team, you're probably familiar with the concept of a story. Basically, it's just a way to word a feature request in a way that provides more context as to what the end user is trying to do with the application. So here's a story for adding support requests to Fail Tracker. So as a Fail Tracker user or as a potential user, I want to be able to contact the development team through the Fail Tracker application so that I can bug them throughout the day. That way they can't actually get anything done. So this sounds like an awesome feature. So we're going to go over here and we're going to implement that from top to bottom without ever opening it directly in the browser. We're going to drive the entire thing using Specs for MVC. And then we're going to open it up in Internet Explorer and hope that it actually works. So let's go ahead and start. We'll make a new folder for this new feature. So we'll call this Support Requests. And I'm going to be taking advantage of a lot of ReSharper functionality as well as some of the templates that come with specs for. So I have a template for creating a new spec. So I'm going to go ahead and say, let's make a submit support request spec. So when submitting a support request, and this is going to be a spec for an MVC web app. So again, remember, this is this MVC web app. That's really the only part of this spec that's specs for MVC. The rest of it is really just infrastructure that comes from the specs for project. So let's see. We'll go say that in our MVC web app, we want to navigate to, let's say that there's going to be a support controller. We want to navigate to the submit action on it. And then let's say we're going to find the form for the support request form. All right. And we'll just go ahead and say submit. We'll fill this form out in a second. So Notice I'm taking pretty much the same pattern I might take if I was using a unit test to drive the development of new code. You know, I'm writing code, I'm writing a test that's not going to pass because it's not even going to compile yet. This support controller doesn't exist. But I can take advantage of ReSharper to create this class. And, whoops. Did not mean to start the debugger. Hit the wrong shortcut. I meant to move this guy, so let's move him to a folder. So I'm going to move him over to my fail tracker web. I'll put him in the controllers folder. Not the content folder. Controllers. All right. And I need to make him derive from some class that actually implements controllers. So I have a fail tracker controller. We'll derive it from that. All right. And we'll go ahead and generate this submit method. It's going to return an action result, and we'll leave it returning null for now. We're going to do the simplest possible thing we can in order to get our test to pass or to fail for the right reason, and then we'll make it pass. All right, and we're going to make this form. So let's create a support request form. And let's go ahead and also move that over. Oops. Let's move that to our web models, and let's go ahead and make a support request, or let's just make a support folder. Models, support, create that folder, and move our model there. All right, and let's say that on our form, let's say that there's going to be a subject, so the user can type a subject. And we'll set the value to fail tracker rocks. And we'll go ahead and say that there's also a from field. Some user. And we also need to be actually be able to put some content in what we're going to submit. So we'll say body, set value to. If Visual Studio catches up with me. Uh-oh, spinning wheel of death, bad sign. There we go. So you guys totally rock. All right, so again, I could go ahead and use ReSharper to generate these properties, but for the sake of time, I'm actually going to copy and paste those into the view or to the form. So let's go over to the form. Let's just paste those in. All right, so there's submitting out or filling out and submitting the form, and then it should take us to a confirmation page. So let's see, we want the route to map to our support controller, and let's say that there's a thank you method or a thank you action that we want it to take us to. And we'll go ahead and generate that. All right, so let's go ahead and run this and verify that it fails. You know, most of the time I really don't want the Selenium window being the focus. I like to have it running in the background, but when I'm doing a presentation, it's really annoying that it likes to jump to the background. All right, so there it is logging in. You saw it went to the submit page, but there was actually nothing there. If we go back over to our test, we can see, yep, it actually failed, and that's because it couldn't find the subject element, and that's because we're not rendering a view. We're just returning null right now. So let's go ahead and do the bare minimum we have to get our test closer to failing for the right reason. So let's change this to returning a view. So we'll create our razor view. And this is going to be our submit form. Support request form. Whoops. Support request form. And the layout's actually defined in a view start, so I don't even need that. All right, and let's go ahead and render the form on the page. So we'll say using HTML, get form, and we'll say HTML.editor4model. So I actually have a template in failtracker.web that will render the full editor for any given model, so I'm going to take advantage of that. I was going to say myhelpers.controlbox, and I want this. So this is just going to render a submit and cancel button, and I want my submit label to be send support request. Really doesn't matter because, you know, that's a magic string, and my tests are completely agnostic to this type of magic string. They're all based around this strongly typed view model here. Okay, so with that, if we were to run this test now, which I'm not going to do it just for the sake of time, but if we were to run this now, our test would fail because it would go ahead and find the form and fill it out and submit it, but it's not going to take us to a new page. It's just going to take us right back to our submit page once we submit it. And that's because we haven't, you know, we haven't tilted to do anything else. So go ahead and say public action result. We'll make a new submit method that actually takes a support request form. And we're going to say that this takes HTTP post. And we'll return null for now. Actually, we'll just go ahead and make this one pass. We won't do anything with the form yet. We'll just take advantage of, you could return a redirect result. So you could do the string-based version, but I really hate that. So I'm going to take advantage of this strongly typed version of that from the MVC contrib project. So I'm going to say redirect to the thank you page. And now if I run this, assuming I've done everything correctly, this test should pass. And let's see, it happened so fast. Oh, yep, apparently it passed. Apparently it did redirect us to the thank you page. So that's great. But the, you know, it's really supposed to send an email to the developers. So let's go ahead and write the test for that. Then it should email the developers. So I'm going to say, I'm going to grab the mailbox. That's implemented as an extension method in specs for MVC 1. It might be somewhere different in version 2, but for now it's an extension method. So that grabs the mailbox for my current test context. And I can say that the mail messages, the first one in there, because there really should only be one, that should be sent to developers@failtracker.com. And it picked up the wrong extension method. There. All right, so if I were to run this now, it's going to fail because I'm not actually sending an email message. So let's go ahead and just write the code to do that. So I'm going to say using our client equals new SMTP client. Client.send. And we're going to send it. We're going to use what came in our form. Recipients, we'll just say that goes to developers@failtracker.com. The subject, let's see, we'll use our form, so form.subject and form.body. All right, and just for hackiness sakes, we're going to go ahead and catch any exceptions that are thrown and eat those, because I want to be able to run this in my browser in a few minutes, and I don't have a local SMTP server, and I don't want to stand one up temporarily. So for now, we'll just eat any exceptions that occur, and who cares about error handling anyway. Okay, so we come back over here. If we run our new test to check the email contents, okay. All right, so we come back over here, and our test passed. So our test obviously received an email message. So I think we've implemented, you know, most of what we needed. We could come back over here. I haven't implemented this thank you view, so I could do that. But for the sake of time, to leave some time for questions, I'm going to go ahead and call it there. Like I said, this project, the Fail Tracker project, is over on GitHub, as is Specs4 and Specs4 MVC. All that code's out there on GitHub. So feel free to hop over there and check it out. And yeah, so I'll open it up to questions. Any questions or comments?
Okay, so fire in your questions for Matt. Thank you very much indeed, Matt. That was a fantastic presentation.
Well, thanks.
While we're waiting for some to come in, you've been doing the test against IE. Can I assume you can do it against Firefox, Chrome, all the other browsers?
Yes, you can, actually. So it's limited only by what Selenium can do, because it is built on top of Selenium. But in the config here, I can actually say config dot, let's see, use, trying to remember what the method name is. Let's see.
Use browser.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Use browser. And there's a browser driver. So right now, Firefox and Internet Explorer are the only two that work out of the box. The only reason Chrome doesn't work is because I haven't had a chance to look at it. To get Chrome to work with Selenium, you actually have to have the Chrome executable right next to where your tests are executing. So there's some issues with that I've got to look into. But both Internet Explorer and Firefox work, and Chrome should work. It's just a matter of, you know, writing the code to do it. If somebody wants to send a pull request, I'd be happy to pull that in.
Another question. The mailbox facility you've got there, are we able to dump that out into a folder somewhere so you can actually see the email itself?
At this time, I don't think so. I don't think there's anything in the MailMessageX class that would allow you to do that. That's not a bad idea, though. I know there's some, there's like a test SMTP host and things like that that you can run locally that'll do basically the same thing. They'll intercept mail messages and allow you to save them that way. So yeah, that's not a bad idea. Maybe that's something I'll look at adding in a future version. Or if you want to send me a pull request, that'd be great, too.
Or you can just you deal with it there, but then forward it on to whatever mail host you want to do it. Okay, so here's two questions come in. Is there any full documentation list for Specs for MVC or any code samples? Well, I assume the code sample, one of the code samples is Fail Tracker.
Yeah, one of the code samples is Fail Tracker, and there's another sample application. It's admittedly not nearly as robust, but it's in the Specs4 project. There's a sample, there's a set of suite of specs against the standard ASP.NET MVC project template. So there are some out there you can look at. Admittedly, the documentation on the Specs4 site, which is at specs4.com, that is not nearly as robust as I would like it to be. I plan on addressing that before the Specs4 2.0 time frame.
Okay, any more questions to ask? I don't think so. Right. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed, Matt.
All right. Since I have 2 minutes, you care if I go through this last slide real quick, since I have about two minutes?
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah, absolutely. There's some more questions just coming in there as well.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to start sharing again?
Sure, 1 second.
Yeah. One question here is, what was the name of the display templates project?
Yeah, it's just MVC display templates, and there is a NuGet package. I think somebody already answered that one for me, so thanks, Brent. Yeah, so just install that package, and you should be good to go.
Okay, kind of.
All right, so I did want to call out a couple of limitations. So as you undoubtedly noticed, Specs4 MVC is slow. The 1.0 release, I focused on functionality and not on speed. I've spiked out a few things for the 2.0 release, and I think there's some low-hanging fruit that'll really improve performance. One of them shaved about 50% off of the test times in one of my projects. So I do think Specs4 MVC 2.0 will be significantly faster, but just be aware that speed is an issue in 1.0. And it is a version 1 release, what's out there now, so it's a rough around the edges. I'm sure there's some issues with it. If you do try it out and you do encounter any issues, you know, please let me know. I'll be glad to work through them and try to get any defects that are found fixed. And one big limitation in my mind is that it's really not flexible enough right now. It's built on the assumption that you're doing things the ASP.NET MVC way for the most part, so that you're following the standard conventions that are baked in. one of the things I want to do in 2.0 is to make those conventions flexible enough that you could point this at, say, a FUBU MVC application or something else like that. Anything that has that's based on a set of strongly typed conventions. And so if you want to check it out, go to specs4.com. That's the official site. Feel free to hit me up on Twitter. And I am definitely looking for contributors for this project. I don't have enough time to dedicate to it, but anybody that wants to help out, I'd love to hear from you. So feel free to hit me up on Twitter or on my blog over at TryCatchFail. All right, and that's it for me, unless there's any other questions.
Any more questions? Okay, I think we'll call it there. Thank you very much indeed, Matt.
All right, thank you.
That's a fantastic presentation, and I, for one, will be checking this out as of tomorrow. So, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.